Today is Transitions Tuesday on Mind Talk. I am your host, Dr. Pamela Brewer. Mind Talk is the show that provides you with relationship health and mental health information every day. And on Transitions Tuesday, we focus on all things related to the many different kinds of transitions we all have occasion to experience in our lives. Today's guest has quite a journey to share. I'm very pleased to introduce to you Anne Baroque. Anne is a certified nutritional consultant, a naturopath, an educator, an author. She's very busy, an inspirational speaker. Anne has appeared on several national radio and television programs, and she was featured on the Montel Williams Show. For those of you who don't remember Montel, I'm going to ask Anne about him in just a moment. But she was featured on his program, actually discussing what we're going to be discussing today. Anne Baroque, author of Healing Multiple Sclerosis. How are you, and welcome to Mind Talk?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much, Pamela, for having me on the show. Such a pleasure.
Well, I am delighted. Now, for those who may not know who Montel Williams is, explain why being on his program in particular was so significant.
Well, he's a celebrity that's well known, but really became ravaged with multiple sclerosis, and it really shifted his entire life because he was very debilitated with it, with intense amount of pain and spasms, etc. So his interest obviously was that I had eliminated or cured or put in a remission at multiple sclerosis, and he was very interested in my book that came out because he's, you know, open to all doors, you know, Western and alternative, which was wonderful, and I embrace all that. And so he had me as a guest on the show, and it was really about enlightening people about there's other ways to tackle chronic disease. And that's pretty much the path he's had to do to be able to, you know, continue to move on and feel better and have a productive life.
Well, tell us, give us a definition of what multiple sclerosis is and how it behaves in the body.
Multiple sclerosis is considered an autoimmune disease, and so that's where the immune system is not communicating properly and can attack certain organs and tissues. And specifically with MS, the body's attacking the central nervous system, which is the brain, the spinal cord. And so, you know, it can exhibit such things as such as numbness and paralysis, spasticity, optic neuritis. You know, in my case, I had troubles breathing, swallowing, moving. You know, everything that you take for granted was not working in my body when I was 24 years old. So it's something where until, you know, the immune system is designed to be able to communicate properly, it's not designed to attack itself. But when there's a certain level of inflammation in the body over time, everybody is genetically wired differently, and in this situation, it attacks the central nervous system.
With MS, when folks get a diagnosis of MS, not only does it change their lives, but it also is often seen as something from which you will never recover. But you talk about actually healing multiple sclerosis. So explain how that happens.
Well, I think we have to work with the belief system right off the bat. You know, when I was diagnosed at 24, the specialist said to me, well, the great news is you don't have cancer. The bad news is you have multiple sclerosis and we have chemotherapy. Get ready for the wheelchair. And I looked at my mother and I thought, I'm 24 years old. I'm just ready to start my life. And, you know, I didn't even know what this condition was. I just knew something about incurable. And I looked at her and I said, if I take this drug, I'm not going to make it. I said, so will you please support me in going another route? And, you know, I will tell you that 4 years, it was very tumultuous because there was very little information in the early 90s about alternative medicine. I had some exposure to candida yeast overgrowth, which was one of the root causes to autoimmune. And I started to create my own self-help program because I thought if I'm going to go out, I want to do it my way. And the most pinnacle thing in my journey and why I'm still here today is that I, through 4 years, discovered that, no, the body's amazing. It has this innate intelligence. You need to clean up the inflammation long enough. And it all started more with that I believed that the body could heal itself. So I had to let go of a belief system that said, okay, this is it, this is going to be your ride. And, you know, that didn't happen overnight, because we can instantly grasp a new thought, a belief that sounds wonderful, but then you have to have the tenacity and take the action steps for physical matter to catch up to that belief system. And that was, you know, in a very intense process for me. I survived a near-death experience. I survived a suicide attempt. I literally cracked on every level. And the beauty was, not only did my body heal, but then it was kind of a shamanic journey where I knew I was to be a healer when I came out the other side. So I think, you know, on a simple level, it's whatever your doctor says is information, and what you do with it is up to you, because health is a choice. And the one thing I can tell you, having been almost 19 years in practice now and seeing thousands of clients, the body is incredible. It does know how to heal, but people are still not educated on those core factors that shift and, you know, turn gene markers off and on and clean up the body and get it to communicate properly. And we don't stick with things long enough. You know, doing a 7-day juice fast isn't going to turn around an autoimmune condition. And there is no magic pill or drug or food when it comes to a chronic condition. This was a 4-year journey for me. So I like people to know that this is a lifestyle change, and you know, you have to look at the situation is that you have a spiritual body, you have an emotional body, and you have a physical body. And in a situation such as autoimmune or cancer, if you're not looking at all those bodies, it's very challenging to turn it around. So I like to break those down with my clients and talk about those.
Well, you actually say very early on in your book that the imbalances of emotional, mental, and spiritual stress are just as important as poor diet, environmental toxins, and genetics. And you start off healing multiple sclerosis with an introduction into your life and your life as a child and what that environment was for you. Tell us what that environment was like for you and why that's so important and necessary in a dialogue about healing multiple sclerosis.
I feel it's critical. I feel most chronic diseases, particularly like MS or autoimmune, is all about the self, and I find there's underlying themes of perfectionism and suppressed anger, low self-worth. And in my case, that was my situation. My parents divorced when I was 3 years old. They weren't equipped to know that I needed to not be in the middle of their mess, in essence, but that didn't happen. And, you know, I grew up in a critical household, and I really didn't feel good enough from a very early age. And so I overcompensated by trying to be perfect and taking care of everybody else, but really not taking care of my own needs. And that started to express in different ways. And, you know, suppressing all that energy inside and emotion and not feeling like, it's particularly at that time, we didn't have social media, we didn't have the internet, we didn't have ways to communicate if you needed help. It just wasn't something that was thought of. So for me, it was just, I kind of, how I stuffed that down was sugar. I was a sugar addict until I was 18. And I think that, you know, when I became sick at 18 with mono and Epstein-Barr virus, and then I figured out candida was an issue, I started to open the door into who I was and what my thoughts were and, you know, how did that impact my health and all the stress. So I think that our childhood wounds are critical, because most of us push them down, and then when they do surface, we don't quite know what to do with them. But we have emotional cell memory in the body, and I think that that creates physical imbalance, particularly when we continue to shove it under the rug, let's say, or distract ourselves with addictions or however we do that. So my kind of gift when I work with people is I like to go through the history, and I like to examine where people are at and, you know, where's their headspace most of the time. And I can tell you, particularly in MS and autoimmune, it is about perfectionism and low self-worth. And what I personally had to do was work on changing that belief system for myself over time, which meant I'm perfect now, there's room for growth, and I don't whip that growth. You know, I really have relinquished now that I don't want to be perfect. You know, it's not that I'm not, I'm very much a seeker and I'm very dedicated to my own evolution, but I do it in a way that's palatable, that's humorous, and that allows me to be who I am, because I really wasn't. Through most of my life as a child, I was trying to be someone for everybody else and make everybody else happy. And unfortunately, my body took the hit of having stress continually.
Now, you say very early on that the psychological and emotional events that you experienced really set the stage for your illness. So it made your body more susceptible to illness. So for those who are listening saying, okay, she had a complicated childhood and now she has, and then she had MS, that's not what you're saying. You're saying that you had a complicated and stressful childhood, abusive and neglectful in many ways, and that that set the stage for your body to be able to accept an illness, it almost sounds like.
Well, it comes in, stress comes in for a few ways. So, you know, technically, when you're under stress, whether it's, you know, emotional, it's going to play on the endocrine system, so your adrenal glands, and you're more in that fight or flight. And those hormones then also, if they're continual and chronic, they're going to work on the immune system. And you're going to have the GI balance get off, the immune system's going to weaken. So it certainly has a physiological component. And I felt that, you know, for me, it is, you combine that with then a poor diet, and I was type A, and then, you know, so when you put that combination together, that eventually starts to chip away at a body. So some people will have more physiological stress because they didn't have very good lifestyle habits, and if that goes on long enough, it'll affect the emotional mental state. But I find a lot it's the opposite way, where people are having spiritual disconnection and emotional mental strife, and that eventually starts to chip away at the body. And then, so ever, however you slice it up, you know, everybody's wired differently, you end up getting to a place that can be something such as cancer, which I think has a theme more of guilt, and autoimmune is more about perfectionism and suppressed anger, et cetera. So I think it just, you know, how the pie is divided is individual, but it's the most grossly overlooked when it comes, because I will tell you that when I was going through trying to get answers when I was 18, when I had mono and you're supposed to bed rest and I didn't feel well, I had seen over 8 different specialists. I was on more than 20 different medications, and I was toxic and dying just from the side effects. And I remember going to a couple doctors, and they would just say, it's all in your head. Do you know how damaged that is to hear something? Because the fact is, maybe it is. Maybe it has to do with suppressed anger or shame or whatever it is. But to just be told that makes you feel like there's something wrong with you. And so that in itself then impacts where you go from there and how you, you know, if you don't know how to, you're not equipped to handle that, then that's part of what gets buried in, let's say, the cell memory and impacts your overall health.
Talk about what the cell memory actually is. You've mentioned that a couple of times.
Well, I feel, you know, I mean, this is kind of, I can't tell you scientifically, but in essence, people like Bruce Lipton and Candace Pert, who call, you know, her book Molecules of Emotion, is that, you know, animals, there was a book, I can't remember, it's something with zebras or something, but it was great in the sense that when they go through a trauma, they kind of do, these animals do a funky dance right after to kind of excrete the rest of the cortisol and the trauma, and then they move on as if it never happened. But we as humans don't really do that. We take it in, and then we're not really taught in schools, particularly, you know, K through 12, how to deal with your emotions. How do you deal with negative thought patterns or ruminating thoughts, et cetera? And so it kind of just sits in the cell memory, and then if there's certain triggers that can, you know, reactivate that in essence. So for people that have phobias and anxieties, et cetera, it's not usually stemming from that incident of when they were on a plane and all my, they had a panic attack. It might be going back to something else, but it's triggered that feeling. And so the body does have a memory. And I think that's why techniques today, such as emotional freedom technique or EMDR or hypnosis, all of these are very powerful, because you can start to neutralize that emotion that's attached to it, so that, you know, in the amygdala and the hippocampus area and all that, that you kind of neutralize and not go into that fight or flight. So I think that it's important to recognize that we are a body that carries experiences, but the more that we can stay present, I think this is the most challenging thing I still continue to deal with is, you know, fear and anxiety are coming from living in the past or trying to control the future with the what ifs, the shoulds, coulds. And our place of power is always the now moment, but we have the most challenging time living, thinking, being, and staying there. Because when we're really in that space, you're more free than you ever are anywhere else. But we're trying to operate in time frames that don't exist, and that creates tremendous stress on the body.
The idea of trying to operate in time frames that don't exist is, I think, so critical, certainly to, as you said, areas like EMDR, hypnosis, mindfulness practice. So there's a lot that we know now that we did not know even a few years ago in terms of healing ourselves and being present and reducing the stress.
It is, and I think that it's coming, and it's a time that's so much needed because we're living in a world that seems very fear-based. People are very uncertain about what's going to happen in the world, politics, et cetera, and the place to start is within themselves and start to become conscious of how much energy are you putting into negative thought patterns all day. I mean, the average person, 70% of their thoughts are negative. And so part of that is discovering tools, which it could be simple thing is talking out loud. And, you know, I've had to use many techniques. I'm someone who was downloaded, I think, through both generations, a lot of fear. And it has been my Achilles heel. I'm very mental, and it's been my, you know, inspiration and creativity. At the same time, I've been ravaged at times with fear and anxiety, and I've really had to dig in my tool bag at times and work with neutralizing that. But part of that is becoming conscious of what you're thinking about. Where do you put energy in? Because we are in control of that. People think the mind just runs us. No, it doesn't. We do have the opportunity to say, you know what? You know, I think talking out loud is one of the best tools that I've ever worked with, is just catching that thought pattern or that feeling or that emotion, go, all right, here I go again. I'm, you know, flipping out about this and that. I see you, I accept you, and I give you permission to go. We're not, that was then, we're moving forward. The biggest thing that keeps us in a place of ruminating and longing and anxiety that eludes us is because we don't accept what is. We get caught up in this law of resistance. And so whatever that feeling is, people, I always tell people it's best to get it out of you. So if you're, you know, angry at someone or if you're having fear about something, the key is accept it out loud. People think that once they accept that feeling or that thought that it's going to consume them. And I said, no, it's the opposite. When you accept something, then you actually give it permission to basically move out and create space for some new energy to come in. It's the holding on that gets us into trouble. Because I always feel like it's the dragon that lives behind us the more and more you think about it all day, and then you do nothing with it and just let it be there and think it's going to go away. The key is every time that dragon appears, whether it's anger, fear, shame, etc., is recognize it. Oh, here you are again. And sometimes you have to be humorous, and sometimes you have to be stern. But the key is that, you know, we are very good manifestors, but we tend to manifest things that are more negative and fear-based. And then it has to do with society, et cetera. So we put a lot of attention there versus, you know, we can also be great manifestors of having more positive thoughts and positive feelings, but it takes practice. This is not something that happens overnight. And certainly when traumas come up, it's going to be more challenging. But that's what I hope people will learn most is there's so many tools now that you can pull out in times of crisis and use them.
One of the things that I notice is even if you repeat, even if you say out loud exactly what you said to yourself internally, even in that piece, you can be really quite stunned at what you're actually saying to yourself. And in that moment, as you said, you really then have a choice to do something different with your self-talk.
I think that's powerful. And what I've also learned, because I feel, you know, whatever, somewhat evolved, I've done a lot of internal work, et cetera, is sometimes I just need to say it out loud like a 5-year-old. And if I try not to play this intellectual game with myself, I find that it can cut through the pain so quickly if I just let that little girl come through and go, you know what, I'm hurt or I'm devastated or I'm rejected or whatever that feeling is as a five-year-old would feel it or say it. Sometimes those are the most freeing moments I've ever had with myself when I'm in a place of pain.
And we're going to take a break, but when we come back, I'd like to talk to you in more detail about the impact of sugar in your body. You've described it as the vice that you used to pacify your emotions. So that's what we'll pick up on the other side of this break. Folks, this is Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk. We'll be right back. Talk about sugar. You know, I mean, certainly in today's world, perhaps in the world from the time that we actually know about it, the idea of something sweet was really kind of cool. And it was terrific. It was, shall I say, sweet. So how do you say that sugar was your vice? I mean, it almost sounds like you were addicted to sugar.
I was. I mean, you know, it was a drug for me. You know, I feel that I didn't know how to deal with my emotions, and so I felt that instant gratification when we eat sugar. It's, you know, it definitely changes the neurotransmitters and our endorphins and gets everything stimulated, so we get that instant gratification. And then, you know, you need more, and I'll talk about why you need more. But, you know, for so many people, it's the one thing we have control over with food. And so it's so easy to become addicted, and sugar in itself is, you know, when you read studies, they say it's getting off sugar is as tough as, if not harder, than getting off heroin. And there's one reason that I like to talk to Bridge to about sugar, which is about yeast overgrowth candida. That's something that I specialize in. And that's part of it, is that when you start to have a lot of sugar in the body, it changes the chemistry. Not only does it give you, you know, that instant high or whatever, the energy that you need, but it starts to change physiology, and so things such as hypoglycemia become a problem, which is low blood sugar, and so you're having those highs and lows. You have to have something sweet. If you get angry, as we call it, hangry, if you skip a meal, in the afternoon you crash, and so it becomes this, you know, emotional and physiological substance that we need to keep going to stay even or get through the day. But in the long haul, sugar changes the microbiome, which is the bacteria balance in the GI tract. And everybody has this yeast, which are single-celled, called candida, and they're ubiquitous in male, female, child, and it stays in a ratio that's balanced. But when you start to have a lot of sugar, whether it become in the forms of, you know, it could be carbs such as breads and even cheeses, but also candy bars, muffins, et cetera, it starts to put this yeast into an overgrowth state. And then it turns into a fungus, and it starts to burrow out of the intestinal tract known as leaky gut. And the damage of the yeast and fungus is not so much the critter itself, it's the mycotoxins, its byproducts that it produces that starts to get into the bloodstream, and it can go wherever you're most vulnerable. So for some, it's going to cross the blood-brain barrier, and it can impact, you know, anxiety, depression, mental illness. It could go into MS, Parkinson's. It throws that ratio, and people don't realize, but 90% of where you're making serotonin is in the gut. So right there, you know, things like dopamine, where we get addicted to things, so much of that, the gut-brain axis is critical. And sugar is something that I think is throwing so many people off, particularly that are struggling with mental illness and anxiety and depression. That's an area that I'm so intent on because it's we're almost getting there. There was just a study done on schizophrenia and connecting it with candida because I feel a lot of mental illness could be resolved easier if we address candida, vitamin mineral deficiencies, and dealt with hypoglycemia, high or low blood sugar, actually. And then you could be able to, you know, it, the chemistry would be more balanced, and then it would be easier to tackle the psychological components. So sugar, and then on the other side, just the emotional impact is because you have choice over what you eat, it's so easy to use food when you're lonely or you're sad or you're angry. And I find that with most of my clients. You know, there's a relationship somewhere with food, whether it's salty or sugar or this or that or caffeine. And once you start to get the chemistry more balanced, then the addictive qualities of wanting sugar and stuff, all that goes away because it's the candida that wants the sugar, and that's how it reproduces. So that's part of the cravings. And then obviously when you balance the endocrine system, et cetera, and you don't have the blood sugar issues, all that, you don't have the cravings. So it's something that I wish people would take baby steps on because, as we know, diabetes and cancer, autoimmune, I mean, everything's skyrocketing right now. So I tell people just start slowly. I mean, if you're having something sweet every day, then try to cut it down to, you know, four times a week. And start to, if you're not ready to tackle a program such as mine, I write about all this in the Candida Cure book, and that's my 90-day program, just start with some simple things like probiotics and a good multivitamin and some fish oil, things to start to slowly start to balance the gut, because this is a huge issue.
You just mentioned a moment ago B1, I believe. What, and then you describe in Healing Multiple Sclerosis, you give us a list of some of the things that are negatively impacted by a B1 deficiency, which I don't think that that people by and large connect to anything having to do with, certainly not emotional health. You talk about impaired memory, brain fog, depression. I mean, there are so many things that are impacted upon by a B1 deficiency. What are some other parts of oneself that are impacted?
Well, what happens when you eat sugar is you deplete the vitamins and minerals that run you and rebuild you. So that's what starts to happen is that, one, you get the byproducts of candida, which start to create deficiencies such as B1, et cetera, because acetaldehyde, I can't even say it, acetaldehyde is a chemical that is coming off the yeast, and that's very destructive to nerves, tissues, organs. And that's why when someone's actually obese and they're eating so much food, it's because they're eating usually fast food and stuff that's not great for them, and their body is trying to get whatever little morsel it can of vitamins and fatty acids and minerals, and so they're eating more quantity. And once you get them on good food, their appetite goes down. So when we have more sugar and things that aren't great for us, and those bigger items are gluten and dairy, sugar, corn, and alcohol, these are the things that I think inflame us the most. It doesn't mean you have to completely avoid them, but the more you keep them out, then I feel you're not impacting the body where you're depleting it. Because when you eat food that's not great for you, you start to have maldigestion and malabsorption. So then you can start to become anemic, you don't have enough iron, you start to B12, so you're finding that you're cognitive, you know, you're not clear, sharp, focused, you have more brain fog. And if you don't have enough B vitamins, you're going to have more anxiety and mania. Particularly with alcohol and sugar, you could have more depression. So the key is that, you know, food is chemistry. And if you put trash in, you're going to get trash out over time. And particularly when you're also not breaking down food properly, you're not getting those amino acids. And so things like tryptophan and tyrosine, et cetera, if you don't have amino acids, that's how those are the precursors to making dopamine, serotonin, GABA, et cetera. So everything links together, and that's why I feel when someone is struggling with emotional, mental imbalances, the first place to start is what are you eating? Because when you're living on caffeine or you're living on sugar, you know, a lot of fast food, things like that, it's very challenging then to think your mind's going to be calm that day. It just doesn't work.
Well, you know, it's interesting, too, because if you start with what are you eating? It kind of gives the person a sense that there's something immediate. And I know this work takes time, but it gives them something immediate that they can begin to do to be better and feel better. You know, if my depression is connected to, you know, how much sugar I consume, then I can have one less candy bar. I can do that today. And I think that's another piece that's so important about what you're saying.
I think what you said was brilliant, because it's about choice. People feel stuck, but you always have free will and choice. And here's the great thing. You also get infinite tries. I don't want people to be perfect. That's probably what they're struggling most, is that, you know, it doesn't have to be all or nothing. It is taking those baby steps and realizing that you're always in the driver's seat. No matter what's going on in your life, the place you can start to empower yourself is, what do you eat? You have choice over that. What do you think? You have choice over that. How long do I want to feel this pain? You have choice over that. We don't realize how empowered we can be when we start to look and dissect this and break it down. And I think what's astonished me most is in the last 7-8 years, people would come in for, oh, they've got sinus, autoimmune, this and that. But I can say to you, at least 80% of the people I'm seeing now, along with whatever physiological conditions, are struggling with anxiety and depression. And it's, you know, it's an epidemic right now, and it's even more now because of environmental toxicity, that we need to know more of these components of how can we neutralize the stress that's going on, have a body that's operating and functioning as best as we can, and make better choices. I don't think we live in a world today that you can get away with a glass of wine every day or sugar every day. I just don't, because the food supply is denatured. You have to eat 5 to 10 times what my grandparents ate to get the same nutrient value, and then we have genetically modified food organisms. We are not eating food. We're eating chemicals. And those GMOs disrupt that gut microbiome, and they also create more leaky gut. So candida was more just, I thought, the issue. But today we're dealing with, you know, gluten irritation on the lining. We're dealing with the GMOs, which then also will play, you know, on our brain function and how we're feeling. So I think that one is becoming conscious that, you know, what you eat is important. Two, starting to make baby steps to get to a place that makes you feel better. So it might be reading some books and educating yourself on this whole area. And then implementing it, because it's not about deprivation. That's what people come and say, oh, I don't know if I can do this. I don't want to feel deprived, da-da-da-da-da. I said, it's not about deprivation. I said, let's make this more. The average client only really has to do my program for 90 days to get the body back on track. But if it's autoimmune or cancer, you know, that's more of a lifestyle change. And that's the goal, is think about this as more as a lifestyle change. You're removing inflammation, because here's the one thing I know everybody wants, quality aging. And we are living longer, but people are really sick. They're not having quality of when they're in their later years. And so I know people want energy, mental acuity, flexibility, et cetera, all this stuff. And that means you need to start making better choices now and start with baby steps. I want people to be their own best friend, because that's what I've realized, having gone through a lot of challenges and traumas. As much as I can get support, ultimately, it's within me that shifts my beliefs, my thought patterns, the choices I make with diet. It's me who's changing that. And so you want to start slowly and just know that all that power lies within you. I mean, that's what I get excited to do, is inspire people and educate them, because everybody has the ability to shift where they're at if they're stuck.
And for those folks who really are skilled at engaging in negative thinking, it's easy to imagine that that person would hear what you're saying and then begin to blame themselves because they have fill in the blanks, whatever it is. And again, I go back to what you are repeatedly saying to us today, which is baby steps. Baby steps over time. That's what makes the difference.
And not to blame. Here's the beauty, is that it took me a long time to get to this place. But I remember my mom saying to me at one point, she goes, you know, parenting doesn't come with a manual. And it really put things in perspective because, one, I, you know, stopped blaming certain things that were going on. And two, I realized that my childhood and all the things that I have encountered when I was younger, they were my best teachers. Had maybe I not gone through all that, I wouldn't have fought for my life as much as I did to conquer MS. So it's not about self-blame, and it's not about being a victim in that way. It's that, you know, I didn't sit there and consciously go, oh, let me have MS. But if I look at it all, how it all spun together, I could see that those feelings of low self-esteem and not feeling good enough and worthy, how that could allow disease to come in because of the stress coming in multiple areas and choices I made. But that doesn't mean that I blame myself for that. It's more that, okay, I recognize all that, and I'm willing to let that go. I'm willing to now to look over here and see, okay, how can I do this differently so I can have more peace of mind, so I can have more joy, so I can have more energy, more clarity. So to get stuck in a place of blame and is not, it's not going to get you anywhere, but I think more depressed. So that's part of that acceptance of what is. The past is over. So all you can really do from that place is take that wisdom of what you learned and apply it into what you're doing now. And sometimes we don't get that. Sometimes we have to get the memo a few times before we move out of that pattern. But the key is that, you know, that's the beauty about being conscious, is you can't unknow what you do know. And once you start to learn things and you educate yourself, then you'll always have something to go back to. And hopefully you'll expand with time and learn more tools and, you know, just more about yourself and ways in which we're wired to be able to continue to move forward.
And while it is true that for some folks it takes getting that memo several times, the reality of what you say, I just want to underscore that when you look at the experiences you've had and understand what you've learned from them, not judging them necessarily as good or bad, or accepting that they were either wonderful or horrifying, but you have learned something from it, that then gives you so many more tools than if you spend time and energy trying to push it away, not think about it, not talk about it, and as you said, in effect, grow it.
You do. I mean, when I talk about my story, if I'm on stage and I'm, I can talk about all that from a neutral perspective. And sometimes I'll even, you know, come to tears because I realize how much I've journeyed and how much, you know, I was able to withstand and weather and let go of and process. And, you know, no one's saying there's, you know, they're a fast track through that. Sometimes it does take years and more times and attempts. And adding, you know, and I continually evolve. And so, but there's beauty in that. And I have a lot of, to me, my heroes are my clients. Because I watch them come in basically broken, in essence, or feeling imbalanced emotionally, mentally, whatever they're coming in with. And then I watch them transform on all levels. And that is such an honor for me because I know how challenging that can be. I know how difficult that can be. I know sometimes it's painstaking. And so to be able to watch someone else do that and then transform to where they come in and they're not even sure if they can function like a normal human being again, and then to come out the other side and complain that they don't have enough time to do all that they want to do, and usually because of all that growth they've gone through, they actually align themselves with the passion of what they really want to do here, whether it's hobby or full-time. And to me, there's nothing more spectacular than to watch that because, you know, the human going through life is challenging. There's no question about it. And society, media, we're living in a time that I think is challenges more than ever before. So a lot of ways in which we're going to move forward right now is looking at outdated belief systems. I think a lot of us, these are not laws written in stone, and they're hand-me-downs from society, parents, et cetera. And I think we need to move in examining belief systems and seeing what's applicable, whether it's an area of relationships or love or money or whatever, and break it down more and start to create just one area that you think you're stuck in a new belief system. Because there are plenty of roadmaps and many ways to get to the light at the end of the tunnel. And if one thing isn't working, then do something else. That's the thing, is not to give up. Because when you give up, that's when then you'll saturate yourself with more sugar or people that are toxic or relationships that are codependent, et cetera. So the key is to know that, you know, there's so many viable tools available, and you get infinite tries, which I love, because you don't have to be perfect.
And we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I'd really like to hear more about your particular story, your personal story, as you were able to heal multiple sclerosis for yourself. Folks, this is Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk. We will be right back and continue the conversation with Anne Baroque, a certified nutrition counselor and author of several books, including Healing Multiple Sclerosis, Diet Detox, and Nutritional Makeover for Total Recovery. We'll be right back. And there was clearly a journey that you took from the day that the doctor essentially told you your life was over and start shopping for assistive devices to where you are today. Tell us more about your own personal journey.
Well, it was hell. I'm not versed as much as I know now, but, you know, I really, first of all, I was in complete shock, and I was very debilitated. I wasn't a lightweight case of MS. I had immune response attacks every afternoon where my body would basically feel paralyzed and spasm uncontrollably, and, you know, I was pretty much bedridden from the first 6 to 8 months. I could get myself from the couch to the bathroom and back. So it was absolutely terrifying. And during those days, I probably cried every day, but then something after I'd had a near-death experience about, 2 months into the journey, and after that, it was kind of solidified for me that there was somehow, some way I was going to beat this. But it didn't mean that every day that I was still terrified by my symptoms, so for me at that point, it was just literally getting through days. I couldn't read much, I wasn't able to go out and do things, stuff like that, so it was kind of existing. And as I started to get better, I started to really immerse myself into books. And I did a lot of self-help reading. I mean, I'm a voracious reader, and I started to read everything about the mind, body, spirit. I started to really expand my consciousness onto who we were, what we were, my spirituality. You know, I was raised Catholic, but it really wasn't pushed upon, and I started to gravitate more to Eastern religion and Taoism and Buddhism. And I just, you know, started to open and expand myself and realize things like about the subconscious, because the subconscious really dictates every cell, tissue, and nerve in the body, and it controls the central nervous system. So I realized there were patterns and things and ways to go about that. So through my journey of life, I've done hypnosis, I've done EFT, I did a little EMDR, journaling, affirmations, meditation. These are, you know, a lot of principles and tools that I used along the way. And so I just found that as I started to feel better, I actually moved up to Northern California because the air quality was better than Los Angeles so that I could heal faster. And I changed my major to psychology. So that in itself was interesting because it allowed me to even look deeper within myself. And, you know, then after I realized I was to be, I wanted to be a healer, so then I did more schooling and learned more about, you know, ways in which I could get myself balanced. But those were the tools that I used to get through it. And, it was tough. It was tough because for me, the biggest gap was the spiritual disconnection. Because religion wasn't really pushed upon for me, when I was going through my darkest days, it was very difficult to have hope and what to align myself with. And so that then, you know, I started, the more I started to read and explore, I started to feel spiritually connected, because that's the one thing I know will save a life, is if you have hope. And there were many days I didn't have hope. And so, and when I attempted suicide, I walked into, you know, lockdown for 13 days in two halfway houses, and what I saw and witnessed in there was horrific. And I can say losing your mental faculties is 1,000 times worse than losing your physical. And it was, you know, not only something that I needed to experience for the work I do mainly, I think, because I feel equipped to be able to talk to anybody about anything. And I really realized, you know, how broken the soul can get in the body and everything in that way, and then how can you slowly put yourself back together and then even become more empowered. So it was a long crusade, but I'm someone who, you know, I really give a lot of thanks in the sense of very grateful that I've had a lot of, I have tenacity and I have a lot of courage. And those are the two things that are the reason I'm talking to you today. There's no question. Is that it wasn't good enough for me to just settle and give up. I've always had this, anytime I'm stuck, I might have to kick and scream and, you know, go through the feelings of ruminating certain emotions and stuff, but then I pull my tools out and I will find ways to empower myself to shift that.
And you've mentioned EFT and EMDR. Can you just tell folks what those two procedures are?
EFT is emotional freedom technique. So it's a way of using tapping, where you tap on certain points in the body. And it's on acupuncture meridians, and it's working with thoughts, feelings, phobias, anything that you feel is blocking you. And it also, it speaks to basically the amygdala and that fight or flight response, and it neutralizes that. So it's something that a lot of people use for post-traumatic. A lot of vets who have come back and don't know how to function in life have found it very effective. And EMDR is the same, you know, I've only done it once, but usually more psychologists will use that. And it's where you kind of have a little apparatus that you put little earbuds in and something in your hand, and it's going back to that traumatic event or incident and neutralizing it. Because once again, we're trying to neutralize that stored emotional memory and that trigger and that fight or flight that gets us going in whichever way is what the issue is. So these are wonderful techniques that are within the realm of, once you learn them, you can go online. I think some of the best people that do EFT is Nick Ortner and Julie Schiffman, and they have many free videos that you can just jump in right now and go on YouTube and start tapping on depression or anxiety for free. So I find it's a very powerful technique. And I love the way in which it's moving, because I think talk therapy is so important to identify where you're blocked, this and that. But then, you know, we are energetic beings, and we do have ways to shift other types of pain and that we're stuck in. And so these modalities just make things more, it brings it around and it blossoms in the ways in which we can tackle it and not feel limited. So I have found them very effective.
Tell us about the kinds of sort of daily living changes that you began to make in your life in terms of food or drink or diet. What changed?
Well, I lived in an anti-candida diet for 4 years. I mean, that was the biggest part of that healed myself of MS, was that and taking an antifungal drug called nystatin. Now I have people take herbal antifungals, but basically, you know, I practice what I preach. I basically live more of an expanded anti-candida diet. So basically, I very rarely drink. I don't eat gluten very often. I don't do dairy. It congests me. And I really limit sugar. The beautiful thing is that as I evolved and grew, I didn't have the sugar addiction. Because even though I had to abstain from it when I was healing myself of MS, I still had a tendency towards sugar. And because of what I knew as a nutritionist and naturopath, I knew how to kind of neutralize the body, and it used to still kind of hang over me as an addiction. But as I continue to grow as a person, it has no power over me, and that's probably one of my best accomplishments I've ever done in life, was to get rid of my sugar addiction. So, you know, what I eat a lot of are, you know, vegetables are the main part, and I do some, you know, chicken, turkey, fish, and egg. I eat a lot of raw nuts and seeds, very little beans and legumes, and I do gluten-free grains. I stay away from corn as much as I can. I drink a lot of water and herbal teas. And You know, what I do is I set the tone each day for when I get up. I meditate. I do affirmations. I am conscious about setting an intention for that day to live, be, think as much as I can in the now moment. I tend to go very fast. So for me, it's hard to stay in the now, and it's really something that I continue to work with, because when I stay in the now, I'm more productive, I'm more focused, and I'm much happier. Because once again, when we're not staying in the now moment, we're operating in time frames that don't exist, and it creates anxiety or depression or both. So I'm conscious. I'm very conscious about everything that I do. And it doesn't mean I'm not human. I mean, if I want to go out and there's a great restaurant and, you know, I'm going to let myself go for it, I don't feel guilty about that, and I don't need to. My body's fine. It's healthy. I've been over 22 years symptom-free. MS is not a part of me. So I do enjoy life, but I'm also very conscious because I'm 51 now, and I have amazing energy and clarity and focus, and I want that for the next half of my life. And so I feel the more that I honor, this is actually a key point. The biggest thing that changed for me and why my life is better now is I learned how to honor myself. And when I started to honor myself more, I was able to trust. And when I trust, then life got better. And that's really one of the biggest keys of what's changed in my life.
Honor yourself more.
When you honor yourself more in the ways of taking care of yourself, eating right, making sure that you say no and set healthy boundaries when you need to, ending relationships that might be toxic, et cetera, when you honor yourself, that leads to trust. Because you go, I don't know how to trust. They say, well, start honoring yourself. And the more you honor, the more you can trust. And the more you trust, life becomes better. You're happier. Your thought patterns are going in the direction of being creative and knowing that everything will be provided for and that you're okay. And that takes work. You know, when you get bumped up against another challenge, you've got to kind of go back in that place. So I've been there many times. But once you really do start to honor yourself, that doesn't go away, because I had to come from a place of where I didn't feel worthy of being on the planet. That was a key reason why I had MS. And then I realized that if you exist and you're in a physical, carnal body, that in itself is proof of your worth. Everything else that you do in life is gravy. And when I started to accept that truth and the worthiness was inherent and became stronger and stronger within me, then it built upon it. And then I learned through time, because I was someone who took care of everybody else. Is everybody else happy, and particularly as a healer? And I learned that there's a balance within that, and I learned to start honoring myself. And I think that that's key, because, as I said, people are struggling to have hope and faith and trust. Well, it all starts with self-honor.
And that diagnosis that you received at the age of 24, 22 years later, you remain symptom-free.
And I've watched many of the clients be able to reverse autoimmune disease. And like I said, it doesn't come in a magic pill. It is a change. It's a lifestyle change over time. And, you know, that's the beauty, is that, you know, we don't educate people to know that the body is brilliant. It knows exactly how to heal itself. You just have to clean the environment long enough to remove inflammation and infection. And when you do that, it will heal.
And I think so many of us are not aware of the degree of inflammation that we do carry in our bodies.
No, because unless they have maybe a loud wake-up call, that's going to grab their attention, or they just put up with the annoying, you know, I'm tired, or I have some extra weight I don't want to carry, or I have a rash, or I keep getting, you know, dandruff, or I've got brain fog and I'm anxious, depressed. We just feel like we're supposed to live with that. That's just kind of, you know, it is. And I'm like, no, you don't. There's so many more things you can do to get in your skin and have more clarity and focus and energy, and, you know, and I do it from a place where you don't have to count calories and weigh everything. It's not about that. It's not, I say anti-candida diet, but that's, I don't like the word diet. It's just making better choices, because food is about fuel, and you want to, you know, have enough energy to be able to do all the things you want to do.
For someone listening who has received perhaps a diagnosis, not necessarily MS, but one that causes them to really shift how they think about their future, is there a reasonable first step you would recommend they take?
I would suggest reading you know, I'm not trying to push this, but read a book like such as mine, either Candida Cure or Healing MS, because that's good for any autoimmune. Educate yourself truly on the dynamics of what breaks a body down and what heals it. I feel that's why I spend an hour and a half, 2 hours with my initial clients, is I want them educated so that once they're well, they don't need me. I don't keep my clients. My thing is that you need to know, because there's so much information out there, and I want you to be able to kind of distill it so that you understand how the body works a little bit, knowing that the gut is such a key thing to any disease. I think it's the root of almost all disease. And then also realizing how that also impacts the gut-brain axis and your moods and your emotions. So first is to become educated, and then start a game plan where you take baby steps. You know, in my MS book, I have a slow start program. So I tell people, you know, for a week, or if it has to be a month, get off dairy. Or, you know, the next week, get off sugar. You know, start to eliminate those things that you know inflame you, because those are across the board. So whatever you're doing, if it's sinus issues, or you have an autoimmune, or you have some eczema, inflammation is going to respond based on you making better food choices. So, you know, that's where I would say start. And one is to make a choice to take care of yourself. Really, it's that. You have to want it. If you feel it's a have to, you're going to rebel. You're going to, you know, sabotage yourself. The key is move into a space that you want to take care of your body, that you want to heal, that you want more joy, you want more freedom. And then follow that choice with tenacity and action.
Anne, is there a website folks can go to for more information?
Yes, it's annbaroc.com. So it's annbaroc.com.
Terrific. Anne, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and your journey with us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on.
And folks, thank you for joining us on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service, and it is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a licensed medical, mental health, or other professional. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications, and it's available to you on demand at mindtalk.org. That's mindtalk.org. Or you can download the app from the iTunes store. If you'd like to be in touch with me directly, the email address is Pamela, P-A-M-E-L-A, at, and again, I'll spell that, mindtalk.org. And folks, remember always, if it's unacceptable, then it's unacceptable. Take care.